Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello all, welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. I am your host, as always, still lacking a GPS, Kyle Swagger, and we've got the staple two, as always, on the show, Ewan Rankin and Alex G. Fox. I'll start with you, Alex. How has your week been? By the sound of you, it sounds a little wishy-washy.
Wishy-washy covers it quite well, really. Yeah, I've been slightly under the weather and but busy. So it gives with one hand and takes with the other, just like life should do.
Oh, poetry at its finest, even in, under the flu. Ewan,
g'day.
I haven't spoke to you all week.
No, mate, I haven't seen you for a while. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. Busy, and more busy. Love it's been it. One of those weeks.
Yeah, no, it has been a good week. I've just had... I've had work pushed around quite a bit, so I went to do a guy on Monday, and he got a random inspection from the British Standards Institute. So he said, "I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cancel," but I got paid, so not the end of the world.
Well, that's the easiest way to do it, not do anything, and get paid for it. Love those days too. So it sounds like everybody's had a good week, even Alex.
Yes, thank you.
Unfortunately is sick, but thanks for showing up. It shows your dedication, Alex. We love you. Some good news actually this week, a little bit of rumors, a little nice looking cameras coming out. First one I'm going to lead off with, and something I know that you're going to get into a little in depth with, Ewan, is the Canon EOS 600D. We've seen a review on it over at Tech Radar, and I mean, I'm seeing, what is it, a little over 700 pounds for this camera.
That's pretty competitive. Well, I think that's pretty competitive. As a price, it's not bad at all. Mm. The spec's not too bad in terms of processor size and that kind of thing. There's been a lot of promises made about this camera before it's come out, and hopefully they've been fairly well achieved. The only thing I would say about it is it looks a little bit, if you look at some of the test shots that are on the Tech Radar review, the... Canon have done a lot better with the noise, particularly at the high ISO range. But I've got to say, I think that that they're still being edged by Nikon. They're not quite there yet.
So I can even though he's stuffed up to high heaven, I can hear Alex rejoicing over that one.
I mentioned trying to hold my breath so I don't breathe on the microphone.
No, I mean, I have to agree. It does. It looks like a nice camera. We got 18.7 megapixels. Like you said, it's it shoots 720p recording at 50 frames and also 60 frames per second. There's a lot of bang for your buck here. But, you know, enlighten us before I go over to see what Alex says about this. Enlighten us why you think Nikon has got the edge still.
Well, if you look at the test shots of it, particularly when it gets up to the 1200 ISO range, they're 12,000 ISO range, they're a significant improvement. I mean, Canon was nowhere near on high ISO ranges even 12 months ago, and they've started to get better. But if you look at Nikon, you know, Nikon are shooting at the same levels now at 12,800 ISO, and they're significantly better in terms of noise and chromatic aberrations on it. It's still not there, and Canon are really quite struggling though. I think to a certain degree, especially with the downturn in production that they've had because of the tsunami and so on in Japan, I think that Canon are a little bit behind the eight ball at the moment. I don't know what Alex thinks, but.
I think the camera, like you say, the specs are good. I mean, I'm looking at the ISO ranges. I would have actually gone one further, and I'd have said the 800 to me isn't quite good enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have actually gone that far. But, again, this is a part of the marketplace which is just slightly beginning to get flooded now. You know, Nikon have got an almost identical piece of kit. You've got Canon, you've got Sony. It's what I think they're doing is this is supposedly the entry level now of DSLR, and they're doing the same old thing. They're throwing numbers at something. You know, again, if they're throwing big numbers at 80 megapixels and it's doing this and it's got 720p and all the rest, it's not a professional camera, and I don't think it's doing any of it well enough.
But at 700 quid,
nicely,
at 700 quid, it's not posting to the professional. It's not appealing to you or me.
That's what I was going to say. No. Yeah, it's not. It's posting to my thinking that, hey, I want to move to feel like a pro, but on a budget. And
you know,
I'm looking at this camera right now. That's what I see.
They seem to be putting too much into this camera that doesn't do anything good enough. They're better off giving it a 16 megapixel sensor with better ISO ratings. You know, it seems like they're just pushing it just too far. They're playing the numbers game without, you know, obviously if you're going to spend $5,000 on a camera, you're going to get significantly better quality than if you're spending £500. But if that £500 camera isn't really good enough, don't put so many gadgets on it and just make for that £500 a slightly better camera. And I think that's where all of the manufacturers are going slightly wrong.
Yeah. I agree with that, Alex, but I think, you know, we have to look at the same time. It's people like me that are going to probably buy this camera, think that they're ready to move up to a more pro level. And we're not at that state yet where we can say we want those pro less of those features. We want those features on there because we need help with this, or we're not quite good at that like you guys are. But, you know, that also, don't you think that's gives it its price point too? I mean, we're not talking £1,500 or £2,000 here. We're talking, you know, a little over £700. What do you think, Ewan?
I think that's exactly the point. I mean, it's the bang for your buck kind of decision-making process that you've got going on. And if you want to get into a range of cameras at the SLR level, it's a great entry camera, same as the Rebel T2 was. But I think if you look at what you're getting for, if you look at what you're getting for the money that you're paying compared to what you used to get, in terms of quality of sensor and blowing up an image, you know, you go back to the original 300D, the Rebel that was available in the States. Now, that was an extremely good quality sensor, and I defy you to not be able to blow that up to very similar kinds of sizes almost digitally and keep a high level of quality. There's a problem with a lot of the SLR sensors, and I think I'll defer to Alex's judgment on this in terms of Nikon, but certainly from what I've seen in the Canon range, the problem with them is that when you look at applying the higher image sizes to them, it's almost like the 1.6 crop factor that you've got with them is being done digitally rather than being done optically. They don't seem to have the same clarity of optics and optic capture in the sensors as the Nikons seem to.
Yeah, I would actually. I think that fundamentally is the problem. It's almost like they've gone from a 10 to a 16 megapixel camera. And I know they have done it with pixelage, but it's almost like they've done it digitally.
Yes.
And so when you actually go to do something with that 16 megapixel camera, it degrades at the same rate as if you just started off with a 10 in the first place. So that's what I'm saying. You're better off giving them a really good quality 10
and letting them boost it themselves.
Letting them move it for themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot I do like about this camera, but there's a lot of it that is completely unnecessary, because if you want to get into being, you know, using a DSLR and learning how to take pictures, which is the whole point of doing, you know, going from point and shoot to this, you don't want so much of this nonsense and plugins and filters and stuff. What that's going to do is actually confuse the issue. You want something very basic with a good solid sensor and a nice lens. Then you'll learn how to frame cameras, then you'll learn how to change your ISOs and your apertures and everything else, because that's what you need to learn. You don't want the camera playing silly games with you and taking over.
Well, I think there's a good point in that. There's a lot of photo effects going into this camera in the software, and it's detracting from the processor usage. And actually, I cannot for the life of me fathom why you would want digital effect processing in camera to that kind of degree, or sharpening anymore, because, you know, Elements is £54 if you buy it from Amazon at the moment. I mean, that's just nothing. Even to quite low income families, that's not something that they can't not buy. GIMP will still do stuff and sharpening, and will crop and will enhance and saturate, and it's free. Why on earth do you want to take up processor time and ruin an image before you've even started? Because don't forget, once you've done this, there's no going back. There's no color image that you can then refer to. It's not making duplicates, masters, and versions. It's shooting the original image with the photo effect on it, and you are screwed. And it's taking processor time. I don't get it.
Personally, I think I can say, the only way I can get it is if they don't have all this little bells and whistles on there that they think that people in my market think we need, or they want to shove it down our throats, we won't pay the price that it's on the camera. You know, we think, oh, it's got this already, and I don't have to do that, and I don't have to buy this and go that direction. Maybe that's why, but I completely agree with you. I'd love to just take an image, and I've learned this from you guys. I want to take just an image. I don't want it doctored up. I don't want any effects on it. I want the natural image that I'm capturing right in front of me as much as possible. Hmm. And then if I need to later, I can go into Photoshop or do whatever I need to. But I always think it's best to work from the clean slate and yeah. let other things take its course later if need be.
I mean, that's Kyle, the idea of the program is, you know, you're the judge of how these things work. And I think you've given the exact right answer to that question. We couldn't have put it any better.
Yeah.
You know, you want to take the best picture you can take. And then afterwards, if you want to mess about with it as if it was the negative, then go ahead. But to start off with, you want to take the picture. You want to capture the moment. And you don't want to play around with it at source.
And all in all, it's a nice camera, but there's one thing I will say to sum it up. One thing that's slightly disappointing for that price point, it only does mono sound on the video. So if you're looking to do video on this thing, you're not going to get stereo out of this thing. It's mono, which is quite disappointing, actually. What about this camera? Do you think it will actually take a nice picture, guys? The Sony Cybershot DSC-HX9V. Now, I'm actually loving this camera. Price point wise, we're looking at what, $350, 16.2 megapixel sensor on this thing. It's got a 3-inch LCD display on it as well. Does 1080p video as well. Alex, are you taking a look at this thing, and does it rub you the right way or the wrong way?
It's a nice, small, compact camera. Well, it's not that small, actually. It's sort of... Sony had a habit of making compact cameras that were so small, they were almost challenging the phone style cameras. But this here is, I think this is the place where Sony sits best. They do make some nice DSLRs, but to be honest, if I was going to spend £1,000 plus, I probably wouldn't want to spend it on a Sony. But price range and knowing what Sony does best, I think this is a very nice camera. I think it's getting to the point now where we're looking at manufacturers in general to say, okay, well, you're the DSLR maker, you're the compact maker, you're the miniature compact maker, and you're the bridge maker. And I think other than Lumix with a Panasonic or very high-end versions of this camera that cost 3 or 4 times more, I think this is a very good camera, and I think it's a good price as well.
How's it rubbing you, Ewan?
I agree. I mean, I think the only thing that you can say about some of these things like Nikon Coolpix and Sony Cybershot is that the brand names are kind of very 90s. And I don't look at either of them without thinking back to the cameras of the 90s. There's an association there that I can't seem to get away from in my head, even though the tech's moved forwards. I think Alex has hit the point there that they were talking about, you know, Sony got smaller and smaller and smaller. And I think Sony's ethic was actually to stop thinking about compact cameras and put most of their R&D into trying to make phones into compact cameras with phones attached to them. Because they've always been ahead on the pixel market. You know, they've always been at 8 and 12 megapixels for phones and been a long, long way ahead of other camera producers within phones. And I think what they've done now is taken that R&D and then shoved it back in, retrofitted it, if you like, to the compact market. So you're getting good quality, high pixel sensors. The one thing that's interesting on the article that you've got here off Engadget is it's got the kind of Haynes manual cutaway, if you like, and you can see the sensor size, and that's a really frigging small sensor to be doing 16 megapixels. Now, I haven't seen a picture from this camera, so I'm not going to judge it on that, but that is a very small sensor to be capturing that many pixels of image. But of all the crap small sensors that are over capturing pixels, Sony seem to do it the best. So this has got a real good chance. And at $350, it's competitive. It's a little bit overpriced in the rest of the market, but again, it's still 16 megapixels, whereas, you know, Lumix is quite happy to stop off at 12 and 14.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about it is those, the 10 frames per second full burst mode, which I actually thought was kind of interesting about the thing, and 3.3 wide angle aperture on the thing. But now that you did kind of point out that sensor, it does, and this, I don't know if this is a drawing or is this an actual, this almost looks like a digital type image they've kind of put together here. But if that is the sensor size, which I guess would lead us to believe
that'd be accurate.
A little small. Mm. Yeah, it looks a little small, but 350 it sounds like we're all game. We would all try it. Or does it need to come down a little bit?
Well, it will. I mean, this is almost like the pre-launch price. So if you give this 6 months, you'll find it for $250.
Wait till Amazon's got hold of it.
But it's an interesting market, though, isn't it? Because you've sort of got this level. You've got Sony and you've got the Panasonics. And, you know, in this, so I don't know if it's, what's the opposite of ultra compact, a great big compact. And, you know, you go up and then you've got your Olympus and your Fuji and, you know, you go to your $1,000 or £1,000, even some of these compacts. And then you get these, the lower end or so the smaller end, you've got these tiny things that look like telephones. Oh, no, that gives my age away, doesn't it? Telephones. So, but you know, it's just the way it's all seemingly dividing itself into little nice, clean sections for who does what and who does what well.
Yeah.
I think this is where Sony should be. I think they're doing the right thing.
There's a good comment in the chat room here from Kev. Sony has a handbag camera image, but they do take nice pictures. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, that kind of sums well up pretty well.
Mm.
Yeah. Let's move on with the last story now, and that's the Lumix GF3. Of course, we're still, this is, I guess, would this fit in the compact kind of thing, or is this a little bit bigger than a compact? Is it still kind of compact? I mean, because it's not a DSLR, you can't change the lens.
It almost reminds me of the old Russian spy cameras and these sort of things.
Well, you got the lens in your shoe.
Yeah, it's sort of, I suppose it is a compact. It's like a compact with a proper lens on the front. I mean, I know it's not a real lens, you know, a proper lens, but it's almost like a toy. It's like James Bond had, you know, the lens in his left shoe and his the body in his armpit or something, and then eventually he comes into a plane, into the toilet, and puts his camera together. That's what these things remind me of.
It's an expensive toy, though, for $700, though, with this thing. And, you know, we're talking about the GF3, the Lumix GF3, and... $699 with a 14mm lens. It's going to be followed in late August then by a $599 kit that comes with a 14 through 42mm lens on the thing. I mean, we're all raving about Lumix on here, but that's usually more towards the lower end. And I'll kind of go this with you, Ewan, because you know, you love the camera. You've even given cameras away, the Lumix brand. I mean, is this, again, we're spending double the amount of what the Sony does. And almost double the amount what you see the lower end compact Lumix do. I mean, what's to drive me towards this than say the Canon, the 600D? What would make me go here instead of the D?
I've got this thing in my head now. Instead of the crotch bomber on a plane, you've got the crotch photographer. He goes into the toilet to put his camera together and then comes back and starts snapping through his fly.
There's the title of the show. Thank you very much.
I don't get bridge cameras. I really don't get them because they're trying to kind of... it's like Zuckerberg trying to be a nice guy. It just doesn't wash. It's not a compact. It's too frigging big to be a compact, but the body's a compact size. But then there's this great big lens that's stuck on the front that's you know, a barrel size is designed so that you can actually operate it with your hand like a normal SLR. It's trying to be an SLR, but it's not. It's like a kid that doesn't shave yet or is trying to buy a six-pack and he's only 16 years old. You know, There is someone out there who is going to tell me I'm an absolute dinosaur over this, and I'm bracing myself for the emails that are bound to come, but I don't get bridge cameras full stop, and I certainly don't get this one, because interchangeable lenses on a body that size, at a price that size, why? Why? I'm lost.
Well, ISO range is 160 to 6400 on this thing. I don't know what the sensor size is in this thing, but we're all saying it looks like a toy. I'll kind of go with that department. It looks plastic. The sensor looks like it should be bigger, but it just looks like it's just kind of peeking at you from the front. And it is a bit slightly creepy. It is a crotch camera. I would agree with that, Ewan. It's a crotch camera.
No, there's a point in the chat room, again, getting rid of the redundant mirror, but I'm in my own mind, I just can't see that... I don't see the mirror as redundant, to be honest, totally. And I think that the redundancy of the mirror is something that's a bit of King's new clothes that's spread by the manufacturers to justify an R&D budget and push towards something that I don't know that anyone really is bothered about or wants. Alex, jump in.
Yeah, you say get rid of the mirror, and you know, they have every right to get rid of the mirror if they want to, blah, blah, blah. But one of the things I'd say about a mirror and a DSLR, it does protect the sensor to a certain point. Mm-hmm. So when you're changing your lens and various things, you just don't have a sensor poking out of the front with absolutely no protection between you and the real world. Now, so what they do, they get rid of the mirror, and so what do? They put something else in front. They put like a retractable shutter that closes down as soon as the lens isn't on it. So what you're doing is you're taking away one piece of hardware and replacing it with another one.
But
there's nothing wrong with the original bit of hardware. Yeah. All this is doing is making the camera a quarter of an inch less deep.
I mean, you look at the pen. I mean, sorry, Alex, but the pen, you know, the EP1, that just really... That sums it up, because they've taken away the mirror. They've got this shutter in there now. And if you want a viewfinder, you have to buy the viewfinder extra and fit it on the top on the hot shoe.
Which is a purely digital thing anyway.
Exactly. And I like looking through the viewfinder, and I can't think of anyone that's a professional photographer that I know, who I don't know that many, but I mean, that doesn't, you know, they look at the compacts and go, well, it's nice, but, you know, I'll give it the wife because it hasn't got a viewfinder on the top. I want to look through the viewfinder. And I've got a G9, and I don't like sensing the image out on the back panel. I like looking through the viewfinder.
Well, I suppose, look, the whole point of Bridge anyway was that you had something a little bit bigger than a compact that, in theory, you could use as if it was a DSLR and have all the manual functionality over it. Well, great. It's still, you know, I don't know. We are not that weak and feeble that we can't carry a camera around anymore. You know, I'm sure you can make a compact with a turnable ring on it if you had to. You know, it doesn't have to be a completely automatic zoom, and it doesn't have to be a completely automatic focus. Yeah. It just seems like, well, this is, like you say, Emperor's New Clothes. This is another way of getting us to buy another range of cameras. But, you know, if they gave me one for nothing, it would be great. And I'd give it to the kids and say, look, here's a toy spy camera. And it takes real pictures, too. And don't put it down your trousers because your mum would get angry. That's what
I'd
say.
The best thing about it is the flash on top. Like a bling, and it kind of...
That's right. If it's sticking out your zip to take pictures and it's already got a flash, you don't need...
There you go.
Swing.
It's perfect. Swing. shall we get into questions now, guys?
Let's.
Oh, please. Thank you so much. Dear Kyle, Alex, and Ewan, this is from Todd in Wisconsin. I've noticed that sometimes when I shoot outdoors, I can get a very green tint to the pictures. I can always correct this in Photoshop. I use Elements, by the way. And I calibrate my monitor thanks to your advice. However, I can't reproduce the problem all the time. I thought it might be to do with the trees or the plants in the pictures, but it's not. Any ideas? Is my camera perhaps faulty? It's I guess it's a Canon Rebel T2i. Thanks for your help. Thanks for the help you can offer, and please keep the podcast coming. I learned so much from you guys in the past few months. So thank you, Todd. That's nice to know. Ewan, we'll direct this towards you first, and what's your thoughts? Faulty camera?
It could be. I mean, there's if you've got a Canon, the first thing that you should think about doing on a pretty much annual or biannual basis is sending it back to your local Canon dealer and getting them to service it for you. You'll either find somewhere locally that will service it while you wait, or service it at a day's notice, or they'll pack it off to the regional Canon place and they'll service it for you. And a service never goes amiss. I'm guilty of not doing that for the last few years, but I should do. You also run when you use Photoshop, you've got to bear in mind that Photoshop's not metering, the camera is. So the camera is trying to look at colours and white balance and exposure and make the best guess at what you're trying to take. Now, if you've got it on the full auto setting, it's trying to look across the whole image, and that will probably give you a more balanced output than if you're spot metering. So I'd have a look at the settings you've got on the camera. If there's spot metering, then that could be the issue. So what you're metering off is going to give you a cast across the image. But I mean... You know, cameras tend to naturally do that anyway. The white balance can be off a little bit. The tones can be off a little bit, which is why you put them in a monitor and why you correct for colour using Photoshop on a calibrated monitor. So, you know, the workflow that you're talking about there, Todd, I would say is perfect. It might be just one of those things. Without seeing a picture, I have no clue. But I wouldn't worry too much, but I'd get your camera serviced.
Any little thing to add there, Alex? Do you have a theory?
Yeah, I've got a theory. I mean, yes, completely right. You get it, everyone should get, if you're going to use your camera on a regular basis, get it serviced at least once a year. It's, I mean, here it costs me £20 to £30, and it just gives me the, you know, it costs me that to get it cleaned anyway, so they might as well give it a service while they're at it, and it doesn't really cost any more. The only thing I would say, and I think Ewan touched on it, is if you can fix it automatically with Elements, then it's probably not a hardware fault. Because you can get sensor problems where you get casts over the sensor, but what that's doing is actually it's not reading either the red, the green, or the blue. It's only reading the green channel, for instance, and then you'll get a green picture. And there's nothing Photoshop can do. So that's really would be the only hardware issue you had. So I'd eliminate hardware as an actual issue. But what I would also say is, if you're, for instance, outside, don't let the camera read the white balance itself. Stick it on daylight or cloud and see if you get the same issue. Because what I think it's happening, it's you've got it on automatic white balance, and the automatic white balance is occasionally reading it wrong. I can't think what green is. You'd get green if you were in fluorescent light and you shot outside. I can't remember, but I've got a feeling it's a white balance issue. So if you set the white balance manually to outdoors, and then you probably won't be able to replicate it. But one thing I'd suggest is set your white balance to something like fluorescent and shoot outdoors and see if that's the replication of the issue. But I think that's all it is a white balance issue. And if that's the case, I really wouldn't worry about it. I'd just set the white balance manually.
Well, let us know, Todd, and write us back and let us know if these little tricks will definitely help you. Next question, guys. This is from Craig in Glasgow. He says, loving the podcast. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Craig. I have a question about sensor cleaning. Some dust marks up on my pictures, and although I use a blower to get the dust out, they are still sometimes there. My question is, can I wipe the sensor clean with a cloth, or should I send it away for cleaning? This sounds like he should send it away, but what do you think, Alex?
That's it. Send it away. Do you know how many cameras I've killed? I mean, you know me and killing cameras, but the number one reason I kill cameras is I think, I'll just give this a quick wipe. Don't do it. You know, if you blow it, what the blotches are is you get dust and everything, and your camera will probably have some vibrating system to blow it off, or you can use a blower. But sometimes you get micro droplets of dust that have got moisture in them, and they stick to the sensor like glue. Now, to get that off, I've got all these chemicals. I've got this alcohol. I've got these swabs that are exactly cut to the right size for my screen. And then you blow it and you wipe it and you do this, that, and the other. And then you take it for a sensor clean. And they say, you know, you've got microscopic scratches on your sensor, don't you? And I'm like, whoa, I don't know how that happened. I've never ever touched this camera. Because you're completely embarrassed. But don't do it. There's a million things on the market that say, clean your sensor easily, use this and you'll see exactly what you're doing. By the time you've seen it, you've probably damaged it. So get someone that's insured and get them to clean it. And my place does it while I wait, and I think they charge me £20. But again, they clean the whole camera out for £20. You probably only need to do it once a year.
I would guess you would agree with that, Ewan.
Ditto. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to add to that, really. The only thing I would say is, I'll give you another tip, actually, because I can't add to that, and I can't make it sound any better than it already does. The only thing I'll say on top of that is, if you want to look for, see if you've got any dust particles on your camera, photo something plain against a light background that's got a slight pattern on it so you can autofocus on it, and then take it into Photoshop and do a double curve on it, which means you open up curves, you'll see the line across with the midpoint, grab halfway between the midpoint and the low edge and pull it as high up as you can, and then on the high one, grab between the midpoint and the high point and drag it as low as you possibly can, and you'll end up with a double S curve like that, and all the spots will suddenly go boom at the picture,
and you'll realise exactly how utterly disgusting exactly your sensor is.
that's called the service setting in Photoshop.
That's why it's called NES. But the other thing I'd also mention is, when you're doing these tests, make sure you keep your aperture down. Or up. I can't remember which one it is. Do two shots, one with a high aperture and one with a low aperture, because it's quite amazing what your aperture setting will do. Because if you've got your aperture setting one way or the other, which I can't remember, you won't actually see the dirt. I'm not well. Give me a break.
I shoot it both ways.
One side or the other side. I can't remember off the top of my head. You won't see the dirt, which is not the answer to your question, but sometimes when you've got to take a picture and you're at work and you can't get your sensor cleaned and you don't want to tell the customer, you shoot it with a different aperture because they never know that your camera sensor is dirty.
You want a high number on your aperture, so shoot it at f22 and a long exposure, and then you get a lot more clarity on the dust.
Yes, exactly. So do it the other way. My brain has just gone to pot, but yeah, do what Ewan said. He's still alive.
Regardless, Craig, send it off. Send it off. Don't touch the sensor. Leave it alone. So.
Yeah, don't touch that dial.
Last question, guys. It comes from Guy from Essex. It says, I have a question about auto-correction of images in Photoshop. When I shoot an image, I try and make sure that I have a low enough ISO setting and tend to shoot an aperture priority to control my depth of field and let the camera use auto white balance. But when I get the images on the computer, I usually use auto tone or auto levels in Photoshop, and the image almost always improves and becomes stronger and more vibrant in color in comparison to the original. Is this something that naturally happens with Photoshop for most pictures, or do you think that I'm doing something wrong when I shoot the pictures? I know that there's probably a lot more information required to offer some help, but any answers you could perhaps offer may point me in the right direction. Ewan, you're a Photoshop
man. It's
not
similar to question one, but I mean, if Guy's saying that he gets a stronger image, I'm going to take stronger as meaning generally darker or contrasty. So if you're using auto tones, what it tries to do is you look at your histogram and you've got this supposed is the bell curve that's perfect that Alex keeps saying he's shot and he wants to show me, but I've never seen it yet. And what you do is you drag in your left edge and your right edge contrast markers so that you've got the darks as dark as they can and the lights as light as they can without burning out to white. Now, when you do auto tone, what's happening is your Photoshop is looking at the image and it's trying to make the blacks black and the whites white so that it's got correct band of contrast across it. Now, what you're going to suffer with there, though, is if you've shot an image and it's kind of slightly washed out, it will naturally look stronger. It will naturally look more pleasing to your eye, but you'll lose a ton of detail in that as well as. And the other phrase it used was more vibrant in colour. Again, that's an auto white balance thing. So, you know, the camera's making a guess. You're metering it and Photoshop is not metering it. Photoshop is looking at the entire image. So if you're shooting with spot metering, Guy, you're always going to get differences between what you shoot and what Photoshop wants.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. Anything to add there, Alex, before we get into
it's a similar thing to when, you know, people buy a new telly and when they set it up, they stick the sharpness on 4 and they stick the contrast 4 and they up the color because to your mind, it's like, oh, that's sharper, it's stronger, but it's not natural.
Yeah.
And what quite often you do when you actually get to a better camera, and by a mean better camera, a camera that's not trying to take over and do everything for you, you're actually getting something closer to what the camera really saw in real life. And what you're probably doing is using the camera correctly. The camera's doing exactly what it should do. You know, if it's a slightly grey, tepid sky, the picture's going to be slightly grey and tepid. Now, as professionals, sometimes the client says, no, I don't really want that slightly grey and tepid. I want boom, 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 and I want pounds for it, and I want, you know, a lot of power in the picture. And that's great, but that's not what we saw, and that's not what we shot. And what Photoshop is doing, it's saying, well, if you think this picture's a bit insipid, I'll give it more punch, but it's not necessarily the reality of what you shot in the first place. Right. So I would say you're doing things exactly right. If you learn how to up your blacks and various things in levels manually, then you'll be able to find a compromise between what the truth of the picture you took and the quality of the output you want. There is a trick that I do. Again, this is something I wouldn't ever tell my customers, but when I've taken a picture that which is a bit tepid, insipid, what I do is I duplicate the layer. I then let it do an auto correction on it, and then I get the top layer and I just bring it down a bit so it's a bit more opaque than it would naturally be, and I get a compromise between the two, then I flatten it. But I didn't tell you that.
All right. Your secret's safe with the world now. Hey, guys, question C. We'll get to them. We'll answer them. Whatever it is, wherever you want to go with it, just send them in, bageltechphoto@gmail.com. We will at least get to 3 questions every week. And if we haven't got to yours yet, We promise we will. We will answer every question that comes into the show. BageltechPhoto@gmail.com. We also have a little...
Sorry, Matt. I do reply to every question, though, even if it's not on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, I
still type an answer.
See, Ewan works around the clock. That's your ADD kicking in, isn't it?
I'm awake. I might as well do it.
There you go. BageltechPhoto@gmail.com. We also have a little segment here called The Cheap Thingy. And I know you've got one, Ewan. Alex, are you going to have one, or are you going to think about one while Ewan does his?
I'll make something up when no one's looking.
Okay, great. Well, we'll start with you, Ewan. What is your cheap thingy?
Well, mine came from being out the other week at Warwick Castle with the family, and I shot some pictures of birds, which I put on the Flickr group, which you're going to mention in a minute. One of the things that I knew, but I never, you know, like you get these things that you remember, you forget you know, kind of things. And I was shooting a picture of the kids, and it was really strong sunlight, really harsh shadows, not got a reflector with me to soften them. I'm thinking, well, I could shoot, but that might blow out on one side and be, you know, inconsequential on the other. And one of the things you tend to do when you've got those high shadows is you start to shoot in colour, and then you look back and you're kind of disappointed with the results, so you don't bother doing it again. Or you look at the time of the day, and you know, as photographers, they love the morning and they love the evening, because you've got a much more bland and transparent colour separation across the whole lot. The thing to do, though, is to stop thinking in colour. So as you go through the day from morning to evening, start off thinking in colour and getting the rich tones of the sky and the reds and those kind of things and the blues. When you get towards midday, you tend to lose that, and you get a lot of whites creeping in and a lot of harsh reality. Stop looking at colour and start thinking black and white, and shoot black and white images when you've got harsh shadows, because those contrasty bits are what you live for in black and white photography. Put your ISO range up if you want to make it a bit more grainy as well. Shut your aperture down, and you'll get some really nice results, but stop thinking in colour when you've got harsh shadows.
Good deal. That's a very, very, very good cheap thingy.
Yeah, it is a good deal there. Yeah. By the way, I'm looking at the Stellar's Sea Eagle right now.
Yeah, that was big.
He's up here. That's a beautiful shot.
Oh, that is huge, man. That Stellar's Sea Eagle was 17 pounds in weight. And it had an 8-foot wingspan, and it flew up to the top of Guy's Tower, the very top part of the castle. And when it was sat on the parapet, you could see details on the bird that you couldn't see details on the bloke that was stood next to it. It was huge. I mean, this thing was immense. And when it came into land, the guy that was in the ring said, "I'm going to put the meat down on top of the wooden log, because if I hold my arm out, the bird doesn't care about me. It just wants the food." So it had hit me, and it had pulled me across the ring here. Whereas if it sees it on a hard object, it's got to slow itself down. And he said, "But it has this bird is so big that as it's coming down, it has trouble with its air brakes." Unquote. And as it's coming down, the bird's wobbling from left to right all over the place. It was like a damaged F-15 pilot landing on an aircraft carrier or something. It was brilliant. If you haven't been to the Raptor Show at Warwick Castle, it's a must see. Got to do it.
It looks like it. It looks breathtaking, and the bird is absolutely awesome. Alex, did you sneak away and find something for your cheap thingy?
No, but there is something I'd like to mention in this segment anyway, because I mentioned to one of our listeners, well, I was having a chat with her on Twitter the other night, lovely lady called Teresa in Boston, Massachusetts. We got talking
Teresa,
because
actually.
This very, very sensible and intelligent lady uses not only her iPhone camera, she uses a Nikon D300. So I think we should have her on the show as an expert anyway, because she's got such good choice in cameras. But one of the things we were chatting about is the Flickr group. And I know we're going to mention it, but she couldn't find
a
link.
I'll just let you mention it.
I will do that. She couldn't find a link, and I'm glad to see that I sent her the link, and we are going to put one on the website. But what was really nice was the interaction I found, the conversation about the photography. It was a really nice thing, an extracurricular. We weren't just talking to people and hoping they were listening to what we had to say sort of conversation. So I would say I really enjoyed chatting to Teresa, and it was lovely to virtually meet you. So everyone, please, we will put a link up, but get involved with the Bagel Tech Flickr group. It's becoming more social as well as just us being able to put pictures up. And, you know, we are a nice group of people, and come and make us even nicer by joining in. And I look forward to seeing Teresa's pictures.
Well, we've only got Winnie, of course. I think who's a lady in the group, so we could do
far more ladies because
we could do with the softer side.
We'll all stand up a bit straighter and pull our stomachs in a bit if you will join the group.
We could all do the softer side coming along.
Yes, some pretty flowers rather than these harsh, murdered varieties that we have.
You can get that at flickr.com/groups/bageltechphoto. Get over there, get signed up, and get taking pictures because we love seeing them. About every week, I'll definitely go through there. I'll also put up pictures. I put up some pictures this week. And I have to say, guys, actually, since we've created this group, it's made me want to go take photos. And if I see an opportunity with something that I think I need to take a photo of something because this is just breathtaking, but I do it now because I like to share it.
I think you're the great example, though, Carl, because everyone's going to be sitting there going, well, you know, I'm not a photographer. I haven't got a decent camera. Everything you put us off the iPhone for, and it's brilliant. So you haven't got to have a DSLR. You haven't got to be a massive photographer.
No, go exactly.
Out, take your camera phone out, shoot what you like, and stick it up there. There is no one that's a Bagel Tech listener that isn't eligible for that group. Not at all.
But it's also a case of, I mean, going back to Teresa, she had some pictures. She does a lot of boating. And there's some pictures of boats going around sailing in Boston Harbor. And yes, they're lovely pictures, but it's a part of the world. I mean, Kyle, you're in the Philippines. Please God, I'll get out there one day to see you. But I love to see where my friend Carl lives. I love to see what's going on in his life, in his neighborhood. And as a group of people, we can get each other interested in more than just the picture, but the content as well. So let's all become a great community on Flickr.
Exactly. And another way to do that also is to follow us all on Twitter, too. I mean, we'll give them here at the end of the show with all of our Twitter load. But social media has really changed how we do everything, I think, now, particularly with photography and how we can share it and distribute it and discuss it and everything. But please do flickr.com/groups/bageltechphoto. Get over there. Get taking pictures. Get involved. Like Ewan said, you can be an iPhone user. That's what I'm using. I'm using an iPhone 4, and I love the camera on it, and I'm finding myself really drawn to take more pictures now because of the group. So get over there and do it to it. We got to mention our sponsor for the show, which is UK2.net. None of it would be possible. We wouldn't be able to sit here and talk about photography week after week after week and do it for free for you without them. And really what you need to do, bageltechnews.com is the destination. Go there. Go to the bottom of the page. Just click the click-through down there if you're looking for some great, reliable web hosting, VPS server. They're going to have you covered over there, but please go to bageltechnews.com, click the click through. That way they know we're sending you, and that way they can keep us really on the air and every show that's here on the Bagel Tech Network. Ewan, usually know what's going on deal-wise. I would guess it's still the same old promotional thing that we got going on with UK2?
Well, it's dead simple now. I mean, it really is simple. The standard deal is that if you use the click through from our website, they know that you've come over there. When you get to check out with any of the services that you bought, and it doesn't matter what services you buy, whether you're talking about e-commerce or you're talking about domain name or VPS server or co-location services, any of the real expensive stuff, you're going to get 15% off because you're a Bagel Tech listener, providing you use the coupon code Bagel Tech. So when you check out, no matter what you've purchased, if you've used the click through, they know it's you. Use the coupon code Bagel Tech and you'll get 15% off everything that you buy.
And I can see that now that you put it here in the Etherpen. I couldn't remember if it was 15 or 20.
There we go.
What? So thank you very much. And thank you, UK2.net. We're at the time of the show now where it's actually a good show, guys. Really enjoyed this one, learned a lot, and the questions were quite nice, too. So we're at the time now. Where can everybody get a hold of you? Ewan, where can we get a hold of you?
You can get me on Flickr. No, a Bagel Tech photo. You can get me on Twitter at Bagel Tech News and at Ewan Rankin, and you can get my website for commercial work and that kind of stuff at ewanrankin.co.uk.
Sounds fantastic. And Alex, besides the clinic around the corner, where can we get a hold of you?
Yes, you just get hold of me on Twitter at Alex G Fox. I couldn't remember my name.
Yeah, you were thinking about the STD not clearing up, weren't you?
Yeah, I was thinking. I didn't know you knew about that. Is there not a Facebook group as well, Ewan?
Yeah, we got a Facebook group, of course.
Oh,
I forgot about that. Yes. Bagel Tech Network has got a fan page and a Facebook group page. So you can go there, and the things like the tweet-ups and the meet-ups and that kind of stuff. And there's a special thing going off with the London Mac User Group in London, funny enough, on the 18th of July. I'll be there. And so will some several other people, some very good people as well. So give it a try.
Good deal. Good deal. If anybody's bothered, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/KyleSwagger. We hope you guys enjoyed this week's show. I think we did. And we'll be back to do it all again next week. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's edition of Bagel Tech Photo. See you next week.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.